This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And here we are, another episode of the spoiler room. It's our fourth now, 25th anniversary special. And tonight, to talk about I Come in Peace, a.k.a. Dark Angel, and Class of 1999, is a room full of crew members here. We're going to go right down the aisle. First off, we have, of course, the one and only Mr. Cole Meredith. How are you today, sir?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, man.
Always glad to have you here, sir. And joining us once again, the stuffed burrito himself, Gabe, is here. How are you doing today, sir?
Hello there. I'm doing good.
Good to hear. Glad to have you. We have the BFD in the his house, the one and only Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, sir.
Hello.
All right. And, of course, back with us once again is Mr. Joe Caldwell. Welcome back to the spoiler room, sir.
What's up, everybody? How you doing?
Doing well. Yeah. Yeah. And we've got Chewie in here somewhere.
Did I hear a Wookiee?
Yeah. I think I heard a Wookiee somewhere. And then we have the one and only Paul Salazar. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm still recovering from my A Come in Peace drinking game, where every time the bad guy says that one line, or every time Dolph Lundgren kicks somebody, you got to take a drink.
And you are still alive and not dying from alcohol poisoning. I'm impressed.
It was up there pretty high.
And last in our list, but definitely not least, the one and only Mr. Scott Davis. Hello, sir.
Hey.
All right.
You joined in on the game.
Nothing but class.
I thought we were still playing when Paul said it.
Nothing but class here in the spoiler room this evening. And so the first movie we are going to cover this month from 1990 is called Dark Angel, though I like the title better, I Come in Peace, which is a bit more fitting. And here, according to IMDb, we have Jack Kane, played by Dolph Lundgren, who's a Houston vice cop who's forgotten the rule book. His self-appointed mission is to stop the drug trade and the number one supplier, Victor Manning. They actually used the word whilst involved in an undercover operation to entrap Victor Manning. His partner gets killed, and a sinister newcomer enters the scene. Along with his new partner, Lawrence Smith, the two investigate a spat of mysterious deaths. Normal junkies dying of massive heroin overdoses and bearing a horrific puncture mark in their forehead. Coupled with Kane's own evidence, indicates, wow, this is a long freaking summary for this movie.
I don't think the writers put that much thought into
it. Let's put it this way. Jack Kane, the cop, he finds two big, huge aliens, and one of them's a cop, and one of them's a drug lord, and he helps try to keep them from sucking drugs from human adrenal glands and endorphins.
Yep. Endorphins, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really long summary for that film. Wow, that's longer than the movie, I think. So I Come in Peace. I think all of us are here. Let's start with Gabe tonight. Gabe, do you remember when it came out, or are you a little young for that?
Oh no, I was 9, mm-hmm. And I remember seeing the trailer. Actually, it was on, I think it was on Cinemax, or, I don't know, it wasn't the trailer, it was just some kind of preview, maybe it was with another movie I rented, and I thought it looked so cool, I wanted to see it, plus, you know, I recognized Dolph Lundgren from, The Punisher, and, oddly enough, I didn't know it was the same guy from Rocky IV, hey, I was young.
Well, it was the black hair.
Exactly. And I'm like, I gotta see this movie. Problem is, I never saw it. I never rented it. I had a mom and pop store, video store, real close to my house. I missed that store so much. It was always checked out. And you know what? I always made a joke with my friends and family that I learned Chinese because it was owned by a Chinese woman. And every time I went to look for a movie, including I Come in Peace, she used to yell, I'll check out! I was like, yelling. It was insane. It came to a point where I had to kind of brace myself, you know, like, she's going to yell it. And when she used to catch me off guard when something was actually checked in. But anyway, it was always checked out. So then I went to pay-per-view, and we weren't big on ordering pay-per-view movies, but every once in a while, the cable company would mess up, and they would give you a free movie. That never happened. But throughout the years, it was always on my mind, and I always wanted to see it, but I never saw it until, you know, I grew up, I got a job, I was buying a ton of movies, and I went looking for it. But at the time, I had no idea they changed the name.
Mm-hmm.
I kept looking. I couldn't piece. I kept going to video stores. Do you have the film I Couldn't Piece? I'm like, no, that's not even in our system. I'm like, what? It's got Dolphin Lundgren. What's wrong with you? So throughout the years, I just never saw it until you announced this spoiler room, and you listed that movie. And, you know, it was always on the back of my mind that I'm going to, so the movie was online, and I was like, you know what, I've got to join this spoiler room segment so that I can actually finally see this damn movie. So I finally saw it. I remember seeing the trailers, always wanting to see it, and finally I saw it, and I thought it was interesting.
It's definitely interesting, and we'll get to it in a minute. I just want to get some experiences from the other fine folks here in the room. Glenn, what about you? Remember when you first heard of this film?
Oh, I saw this at the theater.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren was kind of, I don't know if you'd call him a star, but, you know, as close as he ever got to being a star.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I remember walking out of the theater going, okay. it didn't blow me away, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I think that was kind of when I was coming to a point where I was, I don't want to say maturing in my movie watching, because that's not true at all. but just maybe expecting more out of a Hollywood type film.
You make a good point, because this really doesn't feel like the budget of a Hollywood film it would imply from the trailer.
I did like the mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the female mechanic, the grease monkey.
Yes.
Definitely. She was a bit of a surprise, too. But it was that early 90s, late 80s, hey, let's cast a female in a role that you wouldn't expect a female to be in, though. And then kill her. Because, by God, she can't have that position, right?
Yeah. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Look, we're not starting a parade here, guys. Come on.
Joe, what about you? You remember when you first saw it?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater also. And literally, I had never watched it since it was first released again. But the one thing that stuck in my mind, and every time I hear the term, I come in peace, I always remember the last line Dolph Lundgren says. Literally for 25 years, I remember that line. And can I say it? It's a spoiler,
yeah, go
right?
ahead. Yeah.
You know, at the end, the alien says, I come in peace. And he's out, and you go in pieces, asshole. literally ingrained into my fucking mind. I didn't remember anything else about the movie. I thought Brandon Lee was the partner, because I had it confused with that other Dolph Lundgren movie. And then vaguely. You know,
you're thinking a Showdown in Little Tokyo,
yeah.
Was it? Yeah.
But
which was directed by the director of Class of 99.
Yes, exactly. No, but that line, literally, every time I hear the word I come in peace, that's what I thought for the last 25 years. So
you're not
I had to watch
one.
This movie. I mean,
that was actually in the trailer. They spoiled the movie in the trailer.
Oh, really? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Paul was saying about the drinking game every time he says, I come in peace, you know, and I was like, when I was watching, I was like, how much shit did they blow up in this movie? I'm going to make like a re-edit of everything that gets blown up, because he goes from like precise killing machine to like machine gun rocket launcher or whatever that thing is. And it's like, literally, they blow up half of fucking Houston in this movie. And I was like, it's pretty fucking bad. It's a good-ass movie, man. I was like, watching it again, and I was like, I now know why I remember the ending, because I was into it, I think, when I saw it. And you know, my tastes have always been kind of lowbrow, but I was like, this is like one of Dolph Lundgren's best movies, probably, and besides Red Scorpion or whatever. And,
yeah, I would say, yeah, definitely. Paul, what about you?
This wasn't one that I saw in the theaters. This was one I saw later out on VHS. There were a few scenes where I wore out the tracking.
Yes.
hopefully my mom's not listening. There's quite a few good scenes that
Greased her monkey. Yes, okay.
Yes. But this is the Dolph Lundgren that I remember. It's not the one that you see in the Expendables. Because this is the articulate guy. This is the guy that, at the prime of his physical thing, he was doing kicks and he was, you know, and he was doing these one-liners that were
brain damage.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it just he was. This was the action hero that I liked, and this was your typical action film that I grew up with. You know, it had the one-liners, it had the explosions, it had the babes, and then it had Jan Hama's soundtrack.
Oh,
come on, that's synth soundtrack. That is like watching Miami Vice right there. Come on.
Oh man.
Only with explosions and aliens with receding hairlines.
Cole, what about you? Did you remember seeing this in the theater?
You know, I honestly didn't think either of the films we are reviewing tonight had opened in the theater.
Yeah,
so this mind-boggling.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I Come in Peace for sure, and I think Class of 99 did too. But I know I Come in Peace because I saw it in the theater.
Understood. That's awesome. I have fond memories of this when it came out. Both these movies come from the same era in my life when I was up late watching a bunch of movies. We had four channels that we paid for: HBO, Cinemax, the Movie Channel, and Showtime. And it seemed like this movie was on a lot of them, if not all four of them, as well as Class of 1999, and often in the middle of the night. And my father and I would stay up late and watch this stuff and drink our first beers together and do all that stuff while watching these films. And this one really connected with us at the time because Brian Benben is in it, and yes. Dream On was on
it. Right?
And Dream On was a great show to watch with your father if you were, you know,
awkward scenes.
It was terrific. So that I have those memories of that, you know, period of my life. Watching this film again this morning, it's the worst example of every 80s cop cliche imaginable, with some pretty shitty sci-fi execution going on. You know, I don't have a whole lot of good things to say. Brian Benben is doing his best. Dolph Lundgren is a highly intelligent individual.
Yes, he is.
He really
went
is.
To MIT.
He is a smart MF-er, so I'm not going to... Yep. Here and run the guy into the ground, but I didn't enjoy a rewatch, unlike Class of 1999, which blew me away this afternoon. I didn't have a good time today watching it, especially heading into Fury Road for the 13th time. I will say, you know, I have fond memories of that period in my life, but I don't enjoy the movie. You know?
Okay, nothing wrong with that. And Scott, you, sir, do you remember seeing this first?
I did not see it in the theater, but I remember I wanted to really badly because anything sci-fi was in my wheelhouse, and especially if you could have like action stars with sex and violence and everything else, that's awesome. But what I remembered was I've spoken before on the show about how I was like, you know, it was before the internet, so my source for movie info is Premiere Magazine.
Right.
And I just like read every issue cover to cover, and they always had their summer movie issue. And this, I believe, came out in the summer, I Come in Peace. And the thing I remember about it was I remember seeing promos for it when I was on vacation. And the reason I said, wait, what? Because it was not in their summer movie preview issue.
It was near the end of summer. It was actually September, appeared.
Okay, that explains it, because I remembered that, because I remembered, because they were covering things like Jetsons, the movie, you know, and like, you know, summer shit, you know, and then all of a sudden, like, I come in peace with Duff Lundgren, like, wait, what? An escapee is what I thought, because because I looked at this movie and I said, this has B-movie gold written all over it, except it looks like some idiot actually gave it a few extra million dollars released it to the and unleashed it to the masses, which I love, you know. And Dolph Lundgren, you know, I love Dolph Lundgren. He's actually one of my favorite action stars of all time.
Word.
I still like Dolph Lundgren's movies. Have you seen Command Performance? It's hilarious. where he's a drummer fighting who fights terrorists that infiltrate his concert. And says, dying's easy. Rock and roll is hard. It's awesome. too bad not in the cards for Brian Benben to become our next big action star. I really expected to see those marquees with Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Benben. He's like, you go in pieces, asshole. Anyway, but
wow.
He's, you know, and I didn't get to see it then. I wanted to see it so badly, and I finally got to see it when it hit VHS. It did go to theaters in Minnesota, I remember. A lot of movies did not go to Minnesota because it was not considered a major market then. For example, Class of 1999, which we're going to cover later on, did go to a few theaters. It did not come to Minnesota. And, I remember finally catching it and, you know, yep, everything I pretty much wanted. It did not change my world, but I'm like, CDs that explode and kill people? Sold.
Yes.
And that's pretty much my thought.
And I remember seeing this too and not quite figuring out exactly what I had watched. But I knew it was kind of cool because I liked the aliens. You know, one thing I think this movie shows is you don't need a huge budget to come up with sci-fi aliens. Just give them some white hair, some eye, you know, some colored, you know, lenses, and there you go. You find a couple of big guys, you get yourself some aliens. Now, this is brought to us by the director who gave us Action Jackson.
Yeah.
And he followed this film up, though, with Stone Cold with Brian Bosworth.
Craig R. Baxley, if I can... He is one of those directors that was a stuntman mainly.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's like a big stunt coordinator. If you watch like a lot of the old like episodes of the action shows, watch some old A-Team, you're going to see Craig R. Baxley's name all over that damn show.
Yeah, he's a stunt coordinator for 97 episodes of the A-Team.
Yeah, he was one of those people that was kind of like your Hal Needhams and stuff. He was a stuntman first and a director second. But like if you saw his name, so if you see his name like on like some, you know, Sandra Bullock romance, don't expect much. If you see his name on something where it's an action film, oh, there's going to be explosions in that movie.
So we have our characters, as you folks have all heard. We've got Dolph as our main Jack Kane. And, yeah, this is like the buddy cop film. They've had some really great ones, and so they figure, oh, we can just follow that formula with just about anything. And you guys brought up the name. Brian Benben, there's one character, one actor I would have never saw in a sci-fi action film. It was him because he was about 4'1". Joe, what did you think about that casting, putting him opposite, you know, massive Lundgren?
Me?
Yeah. What did you think of that?
The line that they get off in the movie is hilarious. He throws him the jacket, and he's like, man, this fits good. And he's like, of course, I wore it when I was 12 or something like that. So they knew he was small. I thought he was great. I mean, obviously, I didn't remember he was in the movie, but I've always thought he was a good actor in things I've seen him in. So I thought he kind of added a lot. And, you know, they kind of went with that whole Lethal Weapon kind of mixed with Terminator, kind of mixed with Runaway a little bit.
This movie ripped off a lot.
You know Runaway, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking with the CD flying. I was like, That's just like that tracing bullet thing or whatever, but... Oh, I mean, that's pretty good special effect. You put a CD on the end of the camera, spin it real fast, and follow it around. I mean, I don't know. I liked it. I think I liked it probably more than all you guys because like, I had fond memories of that final line, and I liked the way the bad guy looked. I thought he looked humanoid, but at the same time, strange enough to be maybe, you know, like a little Terminator-ish, I guess. And the actual explanation of what he was doing was kind of stupid, but
the whole
I liked that guy. Yeah, it was... I mean, it made sense when they explained it. I was like, oh, okay. How does he get back home, though? You know, I was like, does he just fly back home or something? But
yeah. Details. Details.
And the cop that was after him, his haircut is actually, you know, in style right now because that girl from Die Antwoord has the haircut.
Yeah. Well, he reminded me of Michael Ironside a bit,
yeah,
didn't he?
A bigger version. Yeah.
He was like a pumped up, someone inflated Michael Ironside.
let me see what his name was. They had names. His name was Azek.
Yeah, he was bad guy. Good was alien. Yeah. Yeah, good alien, bad alien. Oh, man. Yeah, this film is just take every element. Wouldn't you say, Paul, you take every element of your buddy cop film and they threw it at the wall?
Yeah, definitely, including the chief that has that possible ulcer, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you expect a vein to explode out of his head and everything.
But yeah,
they definitely did, and I mean, they had the potential love interest and all of that stuff. It followed the exact formula. It was perfect.
Well, the only thing is, he wasn't like a drunk, and he had a nice house. Those are the two things that went kind of against the grain.
I like that when they go into his place. I always remember that from the very first time I watched it. That he goes in there and he's like, "This is a really nice place." Yeah. I was always really happy, like really surprised, because you always because like they actually did subvert that consciously. That he doesn't live in a flea bag apartment. Yeah. He's actually pretty well off.
He offers him wine.
Well, he was Dolph Lundgren wanted to show you he was classy. You know.
Yeah. If you want, I'll teach you chemistry too.
Yeah. What'd you think, Glenn, of how they wrote the Kane character? Were they trying to kind of break the I mean, here they've used almost every other cliche, but then we get to his character, and they're trying him not to be the cliche cop. What'd you think of Kane?
He was all right. No, I'm very kind of meh on this entire movie. I really am. I went back and rewatched it just a little over a week ago, and
it was still meh.
It's still meh. I mean, you know, I mean, there's little bits I like. I suppose, you know, the Kane character is the way he's played is I think the one thing that actually makes the movie enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sure ain't the villain.
We don't get to see much of the villain.
Not that bad.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's Lundgren. I've never really liked him that much.
Aww.
as anything other than when he plays like the bad guy. He plays a good villain.
He's a hard sell for a good guy.
He is.
He's He-Man. He's He-Man, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Master of the Universe freaking ruled, dude.
Thank you.
Dude, he was a good guy in Red Scorpion.
Okay, first rule of spoiler room. We don't mention Masters of the Universe. Just kidding.
Just to spite you, I'm watching my Blu-ray as soon as I'm out of here. You enjoy that.
The right side of the spooler room is like for the movie. Come on.
The one part I think that displayed probably the worst acting in the movie was towards the end also when the alien shoots that dart thing at him and he's like fighting with like it looks like a coat hanger. They extended that scene way too long. He's like fighting with like a, and I was like, Dolph, you're like fighting with like a spearhead, you know? It's like,
but why did the alien rip it out after he got like hit with it? It was like,
and then he like, it's funny because he's like doing that, and then the alien just makes those stupid faces like he's trying to control it, and it's like, this is the part where the movie breaks down. Plus, I'm not.
I wonder if Dolph Lundgren was thinking, hopefully this looks better in post-production, because right now I look like an idiot.
Exactly. That's what he probably was thinking, yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know what it reminded me of? This last time I was watching it, of course, I didn't see it when I first saw it, but this last time when I watched it, and I got to tell you guys, I only saw it most recently. Time I saw it was like late last year. Sorry, but was anybody remember ever see? Has anybody else here seen Rock and Roll Nightmare?
Yeah, no. I've seen Rock and Roll Nightmare. Oh yeah.
Okay, Rock and Roll Nightmare. There's a scene at the end where John Michael Thor, the metal guy and everything, is like got his hair all frizzed out, and he's has to fight these like little octopus creatures that the devil is shooting at him, but they don't like stick or anything like that or animate. So he accidentally has to hold them to him, and shake them around and make it look like he's struggling with something that is not like an obviously just a stuffed animal. And it kind of really reminded me of that when I was watching Dolph Lundgren like struggle with this roar, trying to like get this.
It's the whole Ed. It's the whole.
Just put it down, Dolph. It's just gonna drop.
It's the whole Ed Wood thing. We don't have a motor for the octopus, Bella.
Exactly.
So you have to make it look like you're fighting it.
Oh, yes.
So the special effects, I think we all agree, kind of resorted to just blowing something up in the back. I mean, the sheer amount of pyrotechnics used in this was insane.
The guy making the pyrotechnics is the real star of that movie.
Well, they had the guns, but they had to be space guns. So space guns just don't put holes in things. They shoot anything and make it blow up.
Yes.
And the best part about that is, if you think about it, they had that one, the device, the spinning blade thing, totally precision device, you know. This totally shows how advanced they are. And then their other weapon is this totally worthless thing they can't hit anybody with that just blows everything up. Like a total contrast of, like, weaponry. It's like,
But it had four settings on it. Come on.
Yeah.
Like Spinal Tap. Go to 11.
Yeah, the four settings, which, you know, just blow things up bigger.
Bigger, exactly.
It was like Bimbo Cop. It was set to worthless.
Set to worthless.
What? And did anybody, the one thing I was laughing at, this is kind of the Lethal Weapon thing too, but the bad guys were called the White Boys?
Yes.
Yes.
And they were like yuppies. And I mean, obviously organized crime is done by people like that. But I thought that they called them the White Boys. That shit was hilarious.
Cole, I know you didn't like it too much, but wouldn't you say that totally was a pop culture thing? I mean, first we were moving into the 90s, so instead of cocaine, our bad guys are heroin addicts, heroin dealers, because cocaine is so passe, and they're yuppies. They're bad guy yuppies. How 90s is that? Late 80s, early 90s?
It's pretty 90s, man. It really is. It is. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, unfortunately, but I, again, watching it, today, all I thought was, Brian Ben and Dolph Lundgren. Wow, that's fucking nuts. That happened.
That's Star Power, man.
Brian Ben and Dolph Lundgren. And Dolph Lundgren's like, you want a glass of wine? It's such an odd film. I have fond memories of actually watching it when I was 13, 14, however old I was. But that's all that subplot. It's very early 90s. It's very, it fits in with Class of 1999 and also a lot of other films of its sort, like Prayer of the Roller Boys and a lot of these early 90s apocalyptic movies have a lot of the same sets and actually a lot of the same songs.
Yes.
I noticed Head Like a Hole was in one of these films that we're covering tonight. I forget which one.
99.
But that was also in Prayer of the Roller Boys, too. So I'm wondering if The studios had, I don't know how all that works.
TVT Records just giving the damn CDs out. It was probably their CDs that they used to feed people. Well, like Nine Inch Nails albums.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom.
That's what I got a kick out of this. I remember watching this back then and now thinking back to it, Gabe. The CDs were just on the rise, late 80s, early 90s, and so they took the technology and made it a weapon, Gabe. What'd you think of that?
That was spectacular. I mean, I wish I had seen this movie when I was a kid. I would have probably gotten a kick out of it, but I got a kick out of it now. And you know, I always knew CDs were dangerous. CDs can be dangerous. You know, I always believe that you can turn anything into a weapon, but a CD can kill a motherfucker if you handle it right. And now, this movie has confirmed that. If you are an intergalactic alien with advanced weaponry, you take this CD. It makes me wonder what he would have done with an 8-track. But, I mean, I thought that was spectacular. I mean, I just wonder what was on that CD. You know, was it some good music? Was it some shitty music? I mean, was it Eric Clapton's greatest hits or was it Wham? I don't know.
Wham.
With a Wham CD. Well, let's not forget the other film that came out this year that also had an alien, that shot something that was Frisbee disc-like, and that was Predator 2 came out in 1990 as well with the exact same weapon.
Oh, wow, you're right.
There are some definitely Predator traits in this movie also, definitely, for sure.
Well, yeah, well, because he was, what, that was his was his last stunt work was on Predator, and you can see... The director of this film, what's his name again?
Craig
R. Baxley. His last stunt work was on Predator. So you can kind of see that in here. I mean,
did you guys catch the foreshadowing at the beginning of the movie with the guy messing around with a CD thing and it shot out?
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I didn't notice that the first time, you know? And then when I watched it again, it was like, oh, my God.
Well, then,
this movie works on so many levels.
It's so deep. And then he used the speaker to catch it. So it was like, I was like, when he pulled the speaker out at the end of the car, I was like, Dolph Lundgren, you are fucking brilliant. I was like, Alien doesn't have a chance. Jesus.
The disc is cutting through people's throats and through walls, but apparently Ben has a sleeve that blocks it. Did you see that?
I made that note, actually. It never turned around to get him. That's what I put that. I was like, that thing never turned around to get him on that scene.
It's like, oh, what?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this thing is just so cliche. You even get the whole shtick with your leading character, because we've all seen enough of these action films or whatever where your main hero's got a thing where, you know, he's got this thing that he won't break, this bond or whatever, his word. And in this one, it was his promise. Promise me. And he's like, I never break my promise.
Oh, man.
Now, you do get some other interesting characters in here, including one where they get the – I want to talk about some of these side characters because I thought they were more interesting than our main characters. One of them was the Universal Creepy guy, Michael J. Pollard, playing Boner.
It was the Growing Pains guy all grown up.
He was just crazy.
But some of you got it. There you go.
or Boner from Revenge of the Nerds. That was a common name back then for guys.
But you know what? Whenever I actually have a kid, I'm naming my first son Boner. So.
No.
what do you think of some of these side characters like Boner and the scientist?
Scientist, yeah.
Scientist. Oh, man, that guy who was hopped up on caffeine, which wasn't that another, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that another concern back then about too much caffeine in your diet or whatnot?
Yeah,
back in the 90s, was it?
It's all popping like pills, too, so it was kind of like, that was pretty funny.
They were concerned about it for me, I know. I don't know.
and we already mentioned we do have that female grease monkey for a very short time in the film. And then, of course, we have as well the theme of the government wanting to weaponize aliens.
Always want to do that, man. You'd think they'd learn.
Well, that scene, there's a scene, folks, in this film where the boss of Ben Ben's character, Smith, Agent Smith, Ben Ben brings him a weapon or whatever.
I was just getting a Matrix scene.
It is Agent Smith.
It is Agent Smith. Arwood Larry
Arwood.
Smith. Arwood.
Mr. Lundgren. Anyway, sorry.
Tell me, guys, this wasn't too bright of him. Here he has his boss who kidnaps the gun for him and gives it to his boss. His boss makes the line about breaking a few eggs. Dolph shoots him before he can shoot Agent Smith. So what does Agent Smith do? He takes his notebook with his handwriting on it and throws it on the body.
I noticed that. He is not a very good special agent.
It's because he's too much by the book. He doesn't use his instincts.
That's right. Not like,
well, you know what? He forgot his rule book too. Unfortunately, he left it at a very incriminating crime.
I didn't catch that, but yeah, I like it at the end too. The way it ends like a sitcom with the freeze frame and shit.
I made a note of that. That's one of the last things. I want. You get to the very end of the movie, and it's one of those. Oh, we've killed all the bad guys. Hey, let's go get pina coladas.
They were gonna go to Rio.
An awesome rocking pop song.
Oh, folks, if there was any film that we're covering during these 25th anniversary specials, I think this one is like the epitome of 90s action film.
I'm not trying to say, you know a character I wish we could have seen more of? I wish we could have seen more of Dolph Lundgren's partner before he got killed. He had that great line when the villain asked him, well, what university are you from? I'm from the University of Suck My Dick.
Yeah, his detective partner was great. I loved him. I wanted to see more of him. And Dolph isn't the best cop in the world. I'm sorry, but okay, he sees the crime going on, but he knows this drug lord is there with his partner. So instead of calling someone in to go after the guys in the liquor store, he just abandons his post.
He probably, he probably forgot the code. He probably forgot 211.
Well, that's just so we could get that great parallelism of him shooting the bad guy and the bad guy shooting the good guy. And, you know,
Cinematic genius.
At the end of this, did anybody feel like it deserved a sequel for Kane to go after the guy in Rio, the actual main drug guy?
That would have been cool.
Couldn't you see a sequel for this film?
I could, but
then the aliens land in Brazil and the whole thing starts over again. So.
It'll be like I Come in Peace crossed with Rio.
Good to see a whole lot more. Good to see a whole lot more alien cottage cheese blood.
Oh, the cottage cheese blood, yes. Our aliens are also very tough, folks, because you can blow the hole the size of the Grand Canyon into one of them, and he'll have enough time to give you a summary of why they're down on the planet and what you need to do.
You know what? That guy, and it wasn't that actor. It was some guy named Jay Bilius, but what he reminded me of was, okay, I was thinking of the actor's name, and now I screwed it up. He's the actor, looking him up, Walter Goggins, who was on Justified and The Shield, and he had a bit part in House of a Thousand Corpses. That guy, I swear to God, looks so much like the good alien who's like broken in the back of the car. He looks so much like him. It just freaked me out.
He's a good actor.
The guy who played the good alien was actually a professional basketball player.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Walton Goggins is a good actor. This guy.
He was also in Django and all that, right?
He's in a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
He looks like him, though. Now that you say that, he does look like him.
I couldn't get over it.
So I think we've discussed it enough, though I have to give an honorable mention. Did anybody notice, I've called him this for years, Mr. Universal Extra, Al Leong, who...
Yes!
Oh, yes!
Yes!
That was in Lethal Weapon, actually.
He was in every action film you could think of. He's the guy with the Fu Manchu mustache and beard, the really long beard, and the Asian guy who, if you needed a minion in your action film, a henchman, he played it. He was in Die Hard, Lethal Weapon. He was in this. He was in, I mean, that
Big
guy
Trouble
was
Trouble Little China.
Yes. The guy, this guy, he's great too. I love seeing him every time. I mean, the guy's got like 60 films to his name. He was in She's Having a Baby, Lethal Weapon, Big Trouble. Yeah, just all these. And then he'd even do TV.
He played the baby in She's Having a Baby.
and then in TV, he played at least three different roles in the A-Team.
There you go.
I loved seeing him in here. So, yeah, Dark Angel, a.k.a. I Come in Peace. We've got raspy-voiced aliens. We've got all your 90s cliche. I have fun with this film. I can understand completely why Cole didn't care for it too much.
It's not the best movie. It's not the best movie. It was okay, but, I mean, it's like it also did have probably the biggest role ever, aside from Big Top Pee-wee, for Matthias Hughes. Who played the bad guy alien.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And
yes.
He always had like that really weird-looking face and stuff, which made him perfect for this part. But, of course, he was like a human in every other role, which was off-putting. And it was like he was like one of those guys who just – where action movies had, you know, a kind of a regimen of things to fit. Like, it wasn't so much that you were a great actor or anything. It was like has muscles. Okay, you're in. Knows karate, you're in too. Matthias Hughes, can do both. Wow. And they put him in movies like No Retreat, No Surrender 2, a lot of those movies from PM Entertainment, the straight to video people. PM.
Dude, he has a huge list of movies. It's just
dozens and dozens.
Klingon.
Yeah, he was a Klingon because he's so huge. You got to have him as a Klingon.
And he's been in stuff like Kickboxer 2, and of course he was in all those things from PM Entertainment and everything. And he was a guy like if you actually start watching like movies from the going on into the 90s, like especially those straight to video action movies, you're going to see that Matthias Hughes guy in a lot of that stuff, you know.
And there is you should have a drinking game where he every time he says I come in peace, you take a drink because you'll be drunk before the movie is over. Because that's almost one of his only lines.
That's all he says. I don't think he says anything else, right? It was funny because the other alien could talk, but he doesn't say anything.
You're right.
I do like when he smiles in the car, though.
Yeah, yes. When he blows up the other cop car, and he just chuckles like a little bit. He's like,
he like smiles like, yeah. Aliens have weird senses of humor, and that's like that. But that routine kills on his planet. I mean, it's just awesome. I just nailed it.
You know what movie he was in? That guy was in Dragon Wars. That's crazy.
Oh, no.
You want to talk about bad movies?
Oh, wow.
You had to.
Wasn't that the floating Robert Forster movie?
Yeah.
I saw that one in the theater. Let's try not to talk about too much about Dragon Wars. But to put I Come in Peace in Bed, a.k.a. Dark Angel, yes, epitome of 90s. They throw the sci-fi element in there to try to be different, but it really is your textbook. Steal from all the other element cop sci-fi films, and let's toss it into this one. I am surprised it ever got wide released, in all honesty. This definitely had more of a direct-to-video feel, but they must have had to fill some screens or something. It wasn't a
Christmas movie. Yay!
That's right. Thanks, Gabe. I totally forgot. This is another action film that takes place during Christmas, much like Die Hard. Although between the two, I would probably choose Die Hard again before... Yeah. I watched this one, but I come in peace. Now, moving on, you want to talk another sci-fi film? Here's a film that predicted the future of educational system. And that's the class of 1999. This one brought to us by director Mark L. Lester. And we basically get the story of robot teachers that have been secretly placed into schools where students have run riot. Teachers do a good job of controlling the unruly youngsters until they go too far and some students get suspicious. Oh my lord, it's been a long time since I watched this film. Let's start with you, Joe. Class of 1999.
It's strange. I mean, I don't know what to say. Mark Lester made Commando, which is probably my favorite action movie of all time. But this one, I've seen it 3 times in the last year, and by the 3rd time last night, I was getting a little bored by the end. just basically like a Terminator ripoff type thing. You know, I mean, it's... I don't know. The end is like real Terminator-y. You know? It's like,
oh, the end is definitely out of Terminator.
It's a Terminator designed by Jim Henson.
Jim Henson does.
I like the guys that play the teachers, though. You know, you got Pam Grier, the guy from It's Alive, and the other muscle man that was in a lot of 80s. You know, he's in a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, you got Patrick, was it Patrick Kilpatrick?
Patrick Kilpatrick!
He's got over with himself. Cat Patrick Kilpatrick!
I love that name.
And the good old Stacy Keach.
Yes, we got Stacy Keach. We'll talk about his character in a minute, but I just want to get initial impressions. Cole, you mentioned you enjoyed this one a lot more than the I Come in Peace.
Oh man, this is where, you know, as a filmmaker and a film critic, I have to separate myself and say I really like this movie a whole shit ton. I liked it when I first saw it. I still like, in fact, I love it even more now that I have more history with these actors. Just, I'll make it brief. Just going down the line, obviously Malcolm McDowell and Stacy Keach, but also Bradley Gregg. I love Fire in the Sky. I think that's a great, weird ensemble character movie. It's not so much about aliens. It's more about the people who are dealing with being persecuted by a small town. Tracy Lind, who is great in Fright Night.
Thank you.
Darren E. Burroughs, who apparently, I haven't checked on this because I tried to remain neutral, but I believe Darren E. Burroughs has a lot to do with the Driftless Film Festival, which is where a lot of my movies have gotten some exposure. But his biggest thing was, you know, Northern Exposure, where he played Ed, to great effect. It's a great character. Also, obviously, Pam Grier, John P. Ryan, Joshua Miller from Near Dark and River's Edge, a phenomenal young actor. I mean, really, really good actors and performances in this. And really what I notice now, you know, being a director, I hadn't watched this since I was a kid, but being a director, how they managed to find and use locations to their advantage that looked like they were apocalyptic. You know, without needing CGI or a whole lot of manipulation, a lot of the sets just looked like they were run down and overrun with gangs. And that was awesome. And I got to throw out Mark L. Lester's name, who for a while was delivering nothing but pretty solid movies. I mean, I've never seen Class of 1984, full disclosure, but Firestarter, Commando, Armed and Dangerous, Class of 1999, Showdown in Little Tokyo, which is one of Brandon Lee's few and greatest performances. Extreme Justice, which is a really good and creepy action movie. Night of the Running Man, which
that
is one, awesome.
That one's pretty cool, yeah.
That movie kicks ass.
This guy is delivering good stuff, man, and this is a solid film on an enjoyment level. I mean, it's not high art, but I like it.
Gabe, what about you? Your impressions with Class of 1990?
I just want to quickly mention I love Showdown in Little Tokyo. Especially that exchange between Brandon Lee and Dolph Lundgren. I think you're about to die, but I have to tell you something. You have the biggest dick on the man I've ever seen.
I love that movie.
And look, it's so short. You can just pop it on and it's over in no time. And
it's like an hour and 19 or something. Yes. It's like really short.
Okay, so class of 1999. Interesting, because that's when I graduated.
I don't think your high school was like this one.
No. Me too, but it was college. And, graduating
there. Close. A lot of fighting, not much gunplay, but, you know. I actually did see this movie in a theater by accident. In Santa Fe Springs, California, very close to where I live, there was a small little theater that had three screens, and they always had double features. It was like $3 or $4 to go see a double feature. And some of the double features never matched. They were showing like a PG family movie with an R-rated movie. I don't remember what movie. It was me, my sister, and some of our friends from the neighborhood. We went to go see, I forget what movie it was. It was a big budget Hollywood film, and that's what we went to go see. But there was this movie, Class of 1999. We had no idea what it was about. What the hell? But it was the first movie to show, and then we saw that other movie. Now, I'm sitting there, and I'm watching, I'm like, this is some... I'm like 9 years old, and I'm like, this is awesome. This is freaking awesome. Like, you know, it definitely had that Terminator vibe, of course, but, you know, it was so much fun. And the thing that cracked me up was... when we left the theater, we were talking about that big budget, you know, Hollywood film. We were talking about it like it was the greatest thing ever. And then when we were in the car and we got to Class of 1999, everybody's like, that was a stupid movie. Oh, that movie was so stupid. Oh, God, that was horrible. And they came to me and I'm like, yeah, it was terrible. Yeah.
Oh, peer pressure.
But then it came out on cable. And Cinemax was notorious for showing it.
Yeah.
And I would watch it every time. It was late at night, I would watch it. And I remember my sister walked in on me like, oh my God, you're watching that stupid movie? I'm like, oh, you know what? I lost the remote control. So, yeah, I remember the movie when I was very young. I saw it a few times on Cinemax, and then it just kind of went away. And they even came up with a sequel with Sasha Mitchell. I never saw that one. But, you know, I always wanted this movie, and it just kind of disappeared until that same video store that I referenced earlier, they were closing down, and they still had the VHS on sale. And when I got my hands on it, it was like the greatest achievement of my life. Like, I'm like, yes, I got Class of 1999. But I like the movie. I have fond memories of it. The one thing that I've never forgotten is when Pam Grier, her character, opens up her chest, and you got the Hispanic gang leader like, oh my God, she got bionic tetas. I will never forget that. Every time I see Pam Grier, I think bionic tetas. She got bionic titties. It's like, you know, this movie, Class of 99, it's brilliant. It really is.
It's insanely brilliant. I will agree with that. Glenn, what about you? Class of 1999? Give it to me, Glenn.
This to me, it feels like, a lot of it feels like a film made by committee. it's like someone, you know, you had, he made Class of 1984, and they said, well, let's do another movie. And then they got a bunch of studio executives who knew nothing about films, who just said, and one of them said, you know what I like? I like those apocalypse movies, like Mad Max. Let's make something like that. And then someone else said, oh, yeah, or Escape from New York. Wait a minute. I really like The Warriors. Oh, and don't forget Terminator. That was a good one, too. And they decided to make this amalgam of all these movies kind of thrown together.
And can we throw in High School Confidential?
Oh, sure. Throw in High School. Hell, throw in Breakfast Club. And it's just...
And right now, Class of Nukem High.
Yes. You talk about all the people that are in here, and a lot of them, you know, some of them were younger when they were in this, but What a colossal waste of Malcolm McDowell.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
He doesn't do anything.
Waste of him as a character in this. And, I mean, I don't know. Stacey Keach, the creepy eyes.
Creepy eyes? Like haircut?
The mullet. The white mullet.
That was more than a mullet.
I'm guessing he got a hold of the same paint they had in Fury Road and spray painted his eyeballs.
Maybe it was one of the aliens from I Come in Peace.
That's what I was going to say. They used the same hair dye.
Right. I bet that is. He's not human.
That's just what Stacey Keach's eyes look when he's on cocaine, guys. Okay? You know, he just lost the Mike Hammer gig, you know?
When he was high on bananas and milk.
I think it was Gabe who mentioned, too, when Pam Grier, when she opens up her top. And every time you see her from then on out, it's so obvious.
Yes.
That she's got this giant prosthetic. Because all of a sudden, she's got like a freaking, like, I don't know, like...
blowtorch arm.
Not the blowtorch arm. Her whole chest is like...
Oh, yeah.
It's like she's wearing a whole other person on her. It's like stick. It's like, it's not even like, you know, she had her big boobs. It's just this, such an obvious, you know, cyborg prosthetic they slapped on her. Where she looks like she's just got, like, this giant, like, barrel, like, you know, chest and beer gut every time you see her.
Well, she slows down in walking, too, because that must have been heavy, because she starts to waddle.
Yeah. so much of it, I mean, just... The end, it's like, well, we survived. Every single person we know now is dead.
Except the two gang leaders. Anyone in the credit in the marquee survived.
I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm just, I don't know.
It's Hamlet, man. It's Hamlet.
Hamlet, Paul? I take it you have some interesting thoughts on 99.
No, it's following the Hamlet model. Everyone else dies.
What about you, Paul? First, when you saw this interesting piece of cinema,
I liked the first movie better, but this film does operate on the model of absolute zero tolerance, just like the movie says. But while I was watching it again the second time, we already talked about it. I very much felt like this movie was a cross between The Terminator, Breakfast Club, The Warriors, and The Outsiders. I really loved the teachers, especially loved how their Terminator vision was like straight out of an Apple II computer. It's like, this is the future, people.
I made a note of that their text, their Terminator vision, their robot vision was just basic text.
Exactly. It was like amazing. And then on top of that, you had everybody speaking in this hilarious dialogue, and their costumes with the big shoulder plates, you know, that they used to have the shoulder pads. It was like, this is what people in the end of the 80s thought that the year 2000 would be like, you know? And it was just like, oh my God, the cars were outrageous. The best scene, though, for me, was the spanking scene.
Yes.
Oh my God! It was like, whack 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 whack. It was like I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, no one suspects anything that the teacher spanks him like a robot. Oh no, these guys. Nothing weird here.
With the weird Hanna-Barbera stock sitcom sound effect put on there.
Oh my God!
And still, with all of this, folks, don't get us—we're not truly slimy. I really enjoyed this film.
It makes the film fun.
This film was so much fun because it was just so bonkers. Scott, what about you with class of 1999?
No, audience. If you hear me judging it, I am judging it. This movie was fucking lousy. you know, it's so bad too because I love cheesy movies. What we needed were more scenes like the spanking scene. We needed something that would say more overtly, this is satire. Mm-hmm. But because it seemed like this is where this movie really wanted to go. But it's like it kept being held back by taking itself so seriously. So, oh gosh, I'm sorry, guys. I can't remember which one of you mentioned Prayer of the Roller Boys earlier, but I mean, it's kind of like that, you know. One of the worst things. I mean, you got a great cast, amazing cast. I think Stacy Keach is the man. But despite my mean joke about his previous, you know, problems with the law. I think Stacy Keach is the man. Mike Hammer was awesome. I actually got to see him live perform in a production of An Inspector Calls once. He kicked ass in that too. You got Pam Grier. You've got Malcolm McDowell, and you know what? They're all freaking wasted in this movie. They're all wasted. I felt bad for them. I didn't feel like any of them were getting to do their stuff. Some got to do more than others, but nobody got to do their full potential. Tracy Lind, Cole, I think you mentioned Tracy Lind earlier. Thank you for mentioning her, because I've always thought she was really great in this movie. She's my favorite part of this movie, and Fright Night 2, she's great in that, which is an underrated sequel, even though it's not as good as the first.
Well, it's a great flick.
It's a great flick, and I think she was great. And I one of the scenes I always remembered was one of the most logical scenes. I mean, and again, it's a scene that should have played as satire when they're going through the teacher's place, and what do they see in the cupboards? WD-40.
Yes.
Yes.
That's funny, guys. I mean, that's the movie saying, ha, 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 guys, because it should be saying that. And she comes up with one of the only logical things. She says, like, this is weird. This is what tips her off. That, wait a minute. No, if you're a woman, you don't buy just like one lace bra. You buy panties. You buy all this stuff. You buy lots of feminine stuff. You buy all this extra stuff. And she's the only person who gets it. Unfortunately, your hero, played by Bradley Gregg, is, oh man, you know, the hero is a big problem. First of all, you know, it really felt like they said, we can't get Corey Feldman. Who do we get? First of all, there should have been somebody said, wait, we're disappointed with not being able to get Corey Feldman? Maybe we should rethink this movie. Oh my God. It's just, it's just a lousy part. It was so cliched. And incidentally, I appreciate, I kind of felt like watching, does anybody remember, this is an old skit, probably a lot of you haven't seen it, it's was an old skit from Saturday Night Live from way back in 1982, and it was when Ron Howard was directing his second movie, Night Shift, and he was being interviewed by Eddie Murphy.
Oh yeah, I got this on DVD, brother.
Yeah, and Eddie Murphy says, like, And he's talking to explain the thing. He's like, well, it's about these two Morgantons, and they become pimps and everything like that. Yeah. And he says, okay, well, who are the black people in the movie? And he says, well, there really aren't any. He says, wait a minute, you made a movie about pimps, and you didn't put any brothers in it? I don't know whether to thank you or slap you, man. That's how I felt like this. Like, you know, I'm looking at this and saying, okay, it's an impoverished area, it's high crime, they're getting stepped on. And I don't want to say like that there should be like all African Americans everywhere or anything like that, because you don't want to stereotype them into what has been a horrible, horrible socioeconomic situation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're just like, the fact that there is nothing but white guys and a few vaguely Latino guys who are only really Latino when you hear them start talking like Ricky Ricardo. I mean, he doesn't even talk like it's like just like, I don't know, I think we should go down here. And then all of a sudden he starts talking like Ricky Ricardo. Bada, 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 bada. I'm like, wait, whoa. It's like, it just sticks out like such a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And it's like such this white bread heroes, and the only, I hated this movie. I hated this movie. And the thing is that it's like, you know, we always talk about like what, man, the 80s really aged poorly. They didn't age as poorly as the 90s.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, because it's like, I did watch. And I did, yeah, the costumes. And, well, yeah, their gang colors. Their gang colors are bright pink and yellow. What kind of gang is that? Anyway, but it's like the, you know, Mark L. Lester, great director, as you guys mentioned. Bobby Joe and the Outlaw, Roller Boogie, and then on to the movies that actually people want to talk about, like that are like, you know, yeah. Firestarter, which is one of my favorite Stephen King movies, Commando, which really is one of the greatest action movies, Showdown in Little Tokyo. You know, also, and I did watch Class of 1984 after this movie.
Okay.
It was my first time seeing it, and it's over the top, but I could take that movie seriously. And this one, it seemed like it wanted to be satire, but it was being held back, and I just had so many problems with this movie. They could have gone in such a over-the-top manner, and it just becomes, well, what it is.
Yep, it is. It is. We get it. You don't like it.
Just a little. Yeah.
Just a little. Tell us how you truly feel, Scott. No, you just did. No, I like this film for what it is. I will say it does have a mixture of tones. Glenn, I mean, we've got kids in here. Well, they're supposed to be kids. I mean, they're all like in their 20s. And especially Lind. Lind was a little hard to convince that she was not 20. But it goes to some dark places. I mean, Scott made a good point of where we have some humorous moments with the cabinet, but then we have an attempted rape on school grounds with Lynn's character. Did you feel that there was a mixture of tones in this film? That it was kind of over the across the board in different. I mean, we get dark and then we get some humor moments and we get some cheesy moments.
Well, like when he had the moment with the mom when the mom was all doing the drugs too. It's kind of like, oh, did they have to throw that in there? I was like, that was kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I said. I don't think they knew what movie they were making.
Well, let me ask this question to you guys: who the fuck gets out of prison and goes straight to high school? I mean, he literally gets out of high school, jumps in his car, picks up his friends, and go to like fucking high school. And I was like, and then as I was watching the movie, I'm like, why do you even bother to go to school at this point when it's this bad? You know what I mean?
It's like part of his parole, though.
Yeah,
it was part of his parole. Okay, but why did the other people go? I mean, I was like...
that I can't help you with.
And then when the scientist tells Stacy Keach, he's like, is corporal punishment still allowed? I'm like, dude, you have stormtroopers that are walking around the school beating people up. I'm like, I think corporal punishment is still allowed. It's like... He's like, corporal punishment, is that still allowed?
I think that's the new standard now at this point.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I was like, you have stormtroopers in the Department of Educational Defense? I was like...
Department of Educational Defense, I love
it. I think the movie kind of was a little satire. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's just only my opinion, you understand, is that I just felt like it wanted to go further, and there was something holding it back, you know?
Mm-hmm. What about you, Cole? You said you really enjoyed the film. Would you say it was a bit of satire mixed in?
Well, sure. I mean, the thing is, you have to put every film in context, you know, which is why Roger Ebert could give Color of Money thumbs down and Swamp Thing 2 thumbs up. Because you got to put shit in context, man. Mm-hmm. I mean... You can't put Beverly Hills Cop in the ring with Seven, even though they're both about wisecracking cops going after serial killers. You've got to put movies in the proper fighting ring. Mm-hmm. This movie can't compete with Terminator, you know, which it wants to be desperately. Yeah. But it certainly can compete with I Come in Peace and Prayer of the Roller Boys and a shit ton of movies like it, all of which I believe it's firmly better than. I mean, if you're a 14-year-old boy looking for entertainment at midnight on Cinemax in 1991 or 2, fuck yeah, man. Put this on. I think there's a couple of great scenes. I think the scene with Bradley Gregg and his family, it's cliche now. When I first saw it, I had a little bit of, I was like, that's good. I was behind it. I mean, I didn't question the fact that there weren't black people in it because there were already movies that dealt with that element. I mean, this is a different type of movie for a different fan base. You know, this is probably for Midwestern white boys up at midnight
Okay.
Persecuted by their parents for listening to Downward Spiral.
I got more of the impression, and get me wrong, this felt like it was a yuppie apocalypse.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's Seattle. I mean, it's a place in Seattle, so you're not going to have that many, you know, black guys in Seattle. There's not even that many now, so it's like, by 1999 there wasn't, and I don't know.
Tonally, just to answer your question directly, Mark, I didn't mean to skirt the question, but okay. I think it works fine tonally. I mean, there's some jokes that certainly worked among the group of guys I watched it with when I was a kid that don't work now, I'm sure. If we were all to sit down and watch it as our people in our mid-30s, they wouldn't work. But the spanking scene is epic. And there's some other great bits like that in this flick that are pretty good. I mean,
well, I like the one scene personally where the teacher puts his hand through the locker to open it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they gave some thought to these androids though, because each one of them was a slightly different. Outside of Pam Grier opening her chest for some reason, I'm not quite sure what the point of that was, but. you know, and it's not the chest you want to see off of Pam Grier. But Paul, what did you think when they got to the part where it's where they get into their BattleBot mode? What did you think of their design and how they were handled there? Were we really trying to rip off Terminator?
No, I think, well, yeah, I guess they were. But I mean, even from the facial prosthetic and all that. But I did think they were at least original with the weapons built into their arms. Yeah. And they all came out different. Like, so each model had its own different type of weaponry. So they were trying to be their own thing, but at the same time, they were also trying not to make it so outrageously not the Terminator that would alienate people. So
it kind of felt like something like from one of those Albert Pune movies, you know, like Cyborg or Nemesis or something like that.
Yeah. Oh God, Cyborg.
I love me some Cyborg.
I would like to make a comment about the sexism in this film. I know. It was written in that time period, but I mean, you had Lynn's character that wasn't very developed. The mom was basically a horrible mother drug addict. You had Pam was probably the best character, and then they had that scene where she's opening up her chest.
Because, like, remember? Woman, yes.
It's like, oh my God. And it was just like, that part I didn't mind, but again, that was back in that time. The sensibility was different, I guess, but...
Some people would argue it still hasn't quite changed, but it's right. Definitely evident in there. Oh, did you catch any other... let's just say the 10% undertones with the Stacy Keach character and the banana. I'm sorry, the banana scene.
10% undertones, nice. I'm like, where is he? Oh, he's going there.
he was drinking milk in one scene also. So.
He was
having drinks with Michael McDowell.
But I mean, the gym teacher as well. There was.
Well, the wrestling scene, you know, it's kind of a little.
The wrestling
definitely.
There's a lot of comedy in this movie. They drive that car off the pier, and then it shows them walking out of the water and stuff. And he makes some stupid line before they jump, go in the water. And there is a lot of comedy in this movie. The one thing I was going to say about context, when he brought up context, if you look at it in context, the first note I have here is, like, it was during, like, when gangs were, like, the scariest fucking thing. Everybody was scared of gangs, you know?
Yeah.
You had your Boys in the Hood, all this stuff. And, like, this movie played on the gang fever. And another thing, a note I made was, he calls it ganging in the movie. He's like, we're going to go ganging. And I kept thinking, I was like, this was even probably before gangbanging was developed, the word. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, that's the context I see it in, is the fear of, like, the, you know, breakdown due to gangs. And it's just really ridiculous. I mean, that a gang could – I mean, I know gangs in Central America have done it where they've taken over cities. But I'm like, literally, they took over the entire city?
Yeah, well, this the way they had this, hey, Gabe, wouldn't you say, did it feel like Detroit from RoboCop?
Yes, it did.
Nice.
It did.
Well, that's another thing he was ripping off, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it. And it's funny that you mentioned all those other... You know what, this is like the film Colors, except yes. Amplified. You know, like in Colors you have red and blue, and this, like you mentioned, has orange and pink. So it's like, let's amplify the color and make these gangs more of a threat. They're going to take over the entire city.
And Colors kind of came out 2 years before it also. So.
I'm glad you brought up that movie, because as soon as people started talking about like the gang movies, all I could think of was, oh shit, Colors!
Colors.
Bring up, yes.
And Boys in the Hood came out a year after.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, gangs were the big thing. Crips and Bloods and all of that were on the huge part of the culture, or at least in the media and in crime. Those were the focus for a while. I mean,
what year was New Jack City? New Jack City was
91. Yeah, so it was during that time, because and it's explainable too. I remember watching on our top porch of our duplex in where I grew up as a kid, watching the gang fights down in down on the street down below. Well, they didn't quite fight. The gangs, one gang lined up on one side of the street, the other gang lined up on the other side of the street, started yelling at each other, and then there were cops who had cut off the road so that no civilians would get really hurt, and they just sat there. But gangs were huge back in the 90s, definitely, especially when it came to crime. I will say some of the dialogue in here just was wild. Does anybody have a favorite line? I think my favorite line in this film was where they get called out. The two gang leaders get called out, and the one guy goes, "Do you trust him?" And the guy goes, "Like a vampire giving me a blowjob." Anybody else have any lines or anything? What about you, Glenn?
I remember that one.
The dialogue was weird and awkward in it, wasn't it?
It was very awkward.
Yes.
And it's awkward, but in a way it kind of works in that it's awkward in basically kids trying to be super tough, mm-hmm. which, you know, they're really not. I mean, yeah, okay, you got a machine gun and funky hat dude's got a rocket launcher. But that doesn't make you tough. So,
well, the casting too, that these kids aren't exactly the tough actors either that you would pick. No,
they all looked, you know, from their look down to their clothes and everything, they looked like they had just like walked off of an EMF video. You know, I mean, they just weren't threatening whatsoever.
Well, for me, I'm like sitting there going, man, you guys make the Red Dawn kids look badass.
And our main, I guess, protagonist with a scope on an Uzi. I mean, there's no point in putting a scope on an Uzi.
That's a good point.
It makes it look futuristic.
But he's badass because he's got a customized Uzi. With a scope that he never uses.
Yeah, because they hold it down below by their chest.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact, too, they had a designated area for gang fights. So mm-hmm. they don't fight everywhere. They all go to this one location. And people just start opening up on each other. That scene was a little weird, wasn't it? Cole, where they sat there, they completely ignored the teachers who stand like a foot taller than everybody else, yet nobody saw them killing everybody. Did you think that was a little weird?
Of course. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that makes zero sense. But again, watching it this afternoon, I was surprised. I was personally really surprised at how much sense it all made, mm-hmm. especially in light of I Come in Peace. Maybe it was just watching them both back to back, and I have a darker sensibility as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So, but I really enjoyed the majority of this stuff. I really did. I enjoyed the campiness of the three teachers. and the off-kilter seriousness of the young gang members, even though there's a weird comedic perversion to everybody. None of it's really taken seriously. I'm not sure how much of that was planned and how much of it was, you know, sort of delegated by lack of budget, but...
I was gonna say I never felt
all over the place. It's all over the place, but I like all that stuff. I like all of the action scenes up until the very end when it becomes full on Terminator ripoff, which it's not Terminator at all. It could never exist in that universe. Yeah, then I tune out, you know. Once the guy is a robot chasing him up a ladder, then you're obviously
But you know what?
In the movie, shit. But up until then, I think it's got a good grade B campiness going on. That's pretty damn enjoyable if you're a young dude looking for some late night entertainment.
But you know what? Even though the show, I think the episode came afterwards, watching it 25 years later, that moment did give me a sense of joy because as a Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan, I got to say, he tried to kill me with a forklift, and that was very
happy. That's another thing. He's being stretched out with a forklift. The most awkward thing is he's over here, this android is screaming, it's like, was this android... programmed to feel pain? I mean,
why was I programmed to feel pain?
I was just going to say that. Exactly. It came in my head. Like, why is he screaming? I mean, what's the point of that?
Makes him a more effective killer.
Yeah, gives it more impact for his death, I guess.
Stacy Keach kind of explains it because he's like, they're getting into full like AI mode or whatever. He says, like, you know, they're starting to think for themselves or whatever. So I don't know.
I was too focused on him and that banana.
You know, I honestly have a theory about that stuff, and it's not what you guys were saying, and it goes back to his weird thing. You know, he's the guy who's in charge of, like, you know, the cybernetics and whatever and the defense contractor and stuff. I think he's not a robot, obviously, because he still has a heart, you know, well, because it gets ripped out. But but I think he has augmented himself with certain, like, bionics and stuff.
I think those eyes,
that's not just a weird color. I think those are, like, bionic implants to his corneas or whatever. He's not walking around with corneas. And I think his diet... You know, where he needs potassium. He's eating the banana. Yep. He needs calcium enrichment. He's having the milk. I think it's all to help enhance the parts that he has put inside himself. I think as the teachers, he is amazed that they can become more human. I think he is trying to become less.
That's funny that you said that because I watched it twice last year and I seem to remember and I watched it last night again, but I remembered Stacy Keach being a freaking robot, and I thought that was one of the reveals at the end. And then when I watched it again last night, and you know, he got blown away, I was like, he wasn't a freaking robot. You know, it was like,
I kept expecting.
I see the point. Yeah,
We were all expecting it, I think. And the thing is, and then at the end, folks, we get another sitcom ending. I mean, you've got your two gang leaders who now are good guys. You know, they're buddies now because they don't have anybody else.
And they were friends in junior high, you know.
They were friends in junior high. And he gets Lind, which I guess is the one thing. But they end this, too, again, on this happy note. You know, we've just blown up most of the school and most of our buddies have died. And that, hey, let's go get candy down by the corner store.
You know, those robots were pretty effective, man. They took out most of those gangs, though, you got to say.
Those robots were effective, but they were military robots.
Exactly.
Are we making a statement here on educating our youth by military?
Of course. Military-industrial complex.
Yeah. So,
you mentioned earlier, Mark, you know, about it foretelling the future, and I think you were kind of tongue-in-cheek. But, I mean, school is – some of it, at least, has come true. I mean, one thing that I'm told, anyway, I haven't gone back to visit, but one thing I'm told is that within 5 years of me graduating from high school, they installed metal detectors all throughout the school.
Yep, that's true.
And I mean,
catch the robot teachers.
That wasn't in Seattle. That wasn't even in Minneapolis. That was in a little dinky small town on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border. You know that they were installing metal detectors. You know what's this guy? What are these people bringing to school?
Stacy Keach
must have brought something. They have Stacy Keach hidden in their backpack.
Robot eyes.
They have something. I don't know. I don't know, something must have happened. So I don't know.
So, class of 1999 and I Come in Peace, two sci-fi films from the 90s that scream the 90s. I think you could put it any less. And, as you can tell, folks, we do have a wide variety of tastes. And whether or not you do enjoy these films or not, I think you should go see them out at least once to experience them and give you a flavor of what things were like for sci-fi fans as the 80s ended, which is like a golden age for sci-fi. And we get into the 90s, and things really did start to change, and these are definitely two pieces of evidence of that. So I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight, gentlemen. Why don't we just go down the list really quick? Cole, where can they find you at?
I'm on Facebook currently, Cole Meredith, Shadows and Lovers Productions. If you're curious about my many personal film projects and Horror Roar, R-O-A-R, for my fan art. But thanks for having me, Mark. This was fun, man.
Oh, definitely. Always glad to have you here. And Gabe, where can they find you at, sir?
You can find me on YouTube, Stuffed Burrito Entertainment. I'm starting to make more videos now, so I guess awesome. That's a good thing. And definitely follow me on Twitter. It's at Stuffed Burrito E. I couldn't fit entertainment in the name. I like to post a lot of witty comments that will make people laugh and spread joy around the land.
We need more joy. And Glenn, what about you, sir?
You can find me in places.
Glenn, you are a mystery wrapped in an enigma.
YouTube, Beep Weep Bunker, Naked Hobo Productions, Facebook, same thing, Beep Weep Bunker, Naked Hobo. I don't even know where I am anymore.
Joel.
I don't even know where I am. Are we starting? Are we ready to start?
Yeah, we're starting. I Come in Peace.
Yeah, Glenn, what were your thoughts on the I Come in Peace?
Is that what we watched?
No, I'm sorry. We watched Dark Angel. Anyway.
Wasn't that a TV show?
Touched by a Dark Angel.
No! Wow. Joel, what about you, sir?
Yeah, you can watch me on YouTube, or you can just type in my last name on the internet. You should come to me. C-A-U-W-E-L, and then put a 3, and you'll be good. Something will come up related to me.
You will come to him, and then you will come in peace. Anyway.
But you'll go in pieces.
And Paul, sir?
You can probably catch me at my office at the Department of Educational Defense. But mostly you can find me at forsakenfilmreviews.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And finally, Scott Davis, sir.
I'm all out of wit. I can't do it. So I'm, you can find me at moviocrity.com, moviocrity.com. I'm also on Twitter at Moviocrity. I'm on Facebook. And you can also catch my web series. Guess what it's called? Moviocrity. That's on Vimeo. It's where the only place you can see all the episodes because YouTube sucks. But if you're too lazy to stop, leave YouTube, then there's most of the episodes are there too. So, yeah.
Awesome. And you can find, again, to all these links on specialmarkproductions.com where you can find our archive. You can find my stuff there as well. My reviews for We Live Film and for The Final Cut channel, where I do mostly indie films, but I may start getting back in wide release. I've had a number of people ask me to start doing them again, so I don't know. I'm tossing that around. And you can find all kinds of other stuff there and links to these fine folks' stuff, as always. I hope everyone are enjoying these 25th anniversary episodes. I know I am going back and revisiting some of these films from when I was 15. it was a very good year. And I hope you go out and seek these films. And stay tuned, because we got a lot of great episodes. Our next episode is our 50th episode. We will be doing something special for that, in that we will be covering films. We are all picking films that are from 50 years ago. So back from 1965. So stay tuned for that. Make sure you go to podcastland.com and vote for us in the TV and movie category. We're still like in the sixth or seventh place there. So give us a vote there. And tune in next time for Here in the Spoiler Room, because the conversation is fresh, but we definitely spoil the movies.